everyone thinks that, okay, well, you know, you keep your business, and your personal. But when business goes bad and you're involved with other people, you'd be amazed how personal it gets, right? I mean, it gets personal, really personal, deeply personal.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Where are you at?
I'm in Atlanta right now. Where'd you live when you were in the States?
Yeah, so I grew up and lived most of my life in California. I spent about a year in Orlando, but I was mostly northern when I was younger and Southern California when I was a bit older.
Orlando, huh? Where in Orlando? Because I was in Winter Park for a while.
So I was at the nuclear power school. I lived there when I was in the Navy, going to school, prepping to be a nuclear electronics technician for the Navy. So I was there maybe just a little over a year going to school. Spent most of my time there because that school is pretty intense. Got to go out a little bit, but I was young. I was, 18. So that was, yeah.
How do you go from nuclear to niche sites?
I joined the Navy. My dad was in the Navy, and it seemed like kind of a good option. And I wasn't really exactly sure what I was going to do. And I woke up. It was actually late at night. I think it was 1 in the morning. I remember running into my parents' room and telling them, I'm joining the Navy. And so we had a quick conversation about this. And they said, sure, Justin, we'll see you in the morning if that's true. And I did. Actually, I joined on the buddy program. I was just going to the Navy with a buddy of mine from high school. He didn't go, and I went anyway. So I joined the Navy, and I went to nuclear power school, to what was called an A school, and then I went to a power school. Ended up dropping out. So I was there a little over a year, and just the coursework was insane. So we were doing, what was it like? It's called 35 TAC-5s, I think they called it. And where basically, after your regular school day, which is like 8 or 9 hour days, you'd have to put in 35 hours extra and at least 5 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
Whoa.
So, from like, you know, I go eat lunch or early lunch or dinner and then be back in the classroom because you can't study the stuff outside the classroom. I'd be back in the classroom from like 5 to 10 p.m. every night, Monday through Friday. And then on the weekends as well, we have to do extra study on the weekends. So normally we take like, you know, half a day or three quarters of a day off. And that was it. The rest of the time we're just studying. And because it's classified material, we had to do it in the building. So that was pretty rough. I ended up dropping out of that.
Okay.
Went to San Diego and I was sonar tech. So I ended up doing sonar tech. I'd done a couple of, when I was attached to my ship, I did a couple of Westpac. So I'd done quite a bit of traveling and I'd been, you know, all over Asia, the Middle East a bit. And that was it. I really got the travel bug while I was in the Navy. I was like, wow, it's so amazing. The feeling when you step into a new country and there's just all this kind of hubbub going about and all this excitement is just, it really struck me as being amazing. And so I said, I want to do that again. So when I got out of the Navy, I said, I've got, you know, GI Bill, college fund. I should finish school. And I'd done some classes while I was in the Navy. So I was going to school after the Navy, and then I had sold some stuff on eBay and was making a little bit of cash on the side in addition. And my buddy Joe, who I'd had, you know, quite a long-standing relationship with, we were friends, was in the mortgage industry, so in real estate. And he was making some serious cash. So, you know, I was asking him about it. I said, so what's going on with this? Like, you know, what's the deal? Can you get me in? And he said, yeah, sure. So he put in a good word for me, and I went to go work at the company he was working at where we were basically selling mortgages. And it was a great insight into, you know, how to sell stuff and that. So, God, this is old stuff, man. This is back in the day.
Is this like before the whole boom or like during the boom when you got into the mortgage industry?
Yeah, this is during. So I'd say this is 2004, probably 2004. And then so Joe and I did that for a while. He made some cash and then went to go live out his dream in Brazil. This may be 2006.
Okay.
No, 2005. So he went down to live in Brazil for 9 months or something. While he was gone, I'd gotten another guy into the industry and we were working together. We actually left that company and we're working for another company, working a much more open environment. And so I talked to Joe about this, you know, setting up our own mortgage business while he's in Brazil. So, you know, we were talking about meeting up and he said, why don't we meet up in Thailand? I said, great. I've been to Thailand. It's a crazy place. So I ended up going out with this dude and meeting Joe there in Thailand. And we had a blast. It took about a month and we kind of talked about what we wanted to do, set up a business. And when I got back, Joe went back to Brazil. I think he had to sell a property or something. He had some stuff he had to do.
Right.
The other soon to be business partner and I went about the business of setting up our own company. So we set up, started setting up the corporation, everything, and then Joe finally got back to the U.S. and we started rolling with it. So we were three guys working out of our house and setting up a mortgage company, closing loans, and that kind of thing. So
did you all live in the same house?
Yeah. No, it was a live, work, play kind of environment. It was like a frat house for, you know, aspiring or burgeoning entrepreneurs.
Cool.
We were running our own business there from the house. Business started to get a bit slower. This is 2006, 2007. It was okay, but we said, you know, like we're sick of being sales guys ourselves. So why don't we bring on other salespeople to sell under us? That seems to be a better move, right? And we can really scale that. So Joe and I set up a process to interview and hire all of these loan officers, basically. And they would close their deals with us. We would take a piece or a cut of the deal. And they would make the majority. And that was going well. We had some good months. And then we had some partner problems with that third party that really started to drag down the business. We got in this spiral where that third party was not working. He wasn't doing any work. And so we're all, you know, equal partners and splitting the money we were making. And, you know, we were frustrated. Joe and I were frustrated because this guy not really doing his work and getting paid the same as us. And so it seemed to be the who can work less game and make the same amount of money. And it was horrible. I've told other businesses about this, you know, other peers and mentors that we have after the fact. And they said, I've never heard of that before, but it was a huge drain on our, you know, psyche, on our business, on our emotional state. And it was a mess. And we didn't address it very well. So we just kind of let it fester and let it turn into a real mess till there was actually like a confrontation point that resulted in that third party leaving the business, basically leaving my life too, leaving our lives. So yeah, it was stressful, pretty painful.
Every business owner that ever had a partner can kind of understand this. And I've had some partners too, and it never really worked out. So that's really why I'm so curious how you and Joe are still working out so long.
Everyone thinks that, okay, well, you know, you keep your business, and your personal. But when business goes bad and you're involved with other people, you'd be amazed how personal it gets, right? I mean, it gets personal, really personal, deeply personal.
Yeah.
And so Joe and I, after that, after our, you know, our third partner had left, we were just emotionally drained, right? So we later on, a couple months later, we'd taken some time, and then Joe and I tried to restart the business, get it rolling again. And we just seemed to, like, you know, we obviously the industry was on a downhill slide at this point. This is like 2007. We were probably, it wasn't the right space for us. We weren't ready to try to build this back up, and it failed miserably. So we were looking for other mortgage companies that could basically swallow us up. We had a pipeline and we had deals going, but we knew the writing was on the wall. So we were hoping, you know, someone else would kind of swallow us up. We took a deal that was definitely not a good one. And yeah, it did not work out very well, man. So
how'd you get rid of that guy though, man? Because I know when you're having a business and there's like, well, with two partners, it's even probably worse. But with like three guys, you own 33%, right? So did you buy him out or did you just straight up kick him out? Like, how'd you
Yeah, no buyout. So here's what happened. The guy was not working. Basically, and this sounds so crazy looking back at it, but he wasn't working. He was sleeping all day. So he would stay up really, really late at night doing whatever he's doing, games and whatever, and would sleep all day while we're trying to get work done. And it was outrageous. So it got to the point where we had an intervention. I'm not kidding you. Like we were in the family room. We had another friend of all of ours over, and we sat down and said, look, we just can't do this anymore. We can't do it. Like, you know, it's getting out of hand. And he didn't take it very well. He's fairly defensive the whole time. And and was kind of surprised about like kind of our approach and our frustrations, and just could not get on the same page with us. And yeah, I mean, it was his decision to leave. You know, we were obviously very frustrated. We tried to not be attacking him, but you know, I'm sure some of that came out. Anyway, he was out. He was done. I think he felt bad about where things had gone. He realized kind of what was going on and just said, screw it, I'm out of here. Like his reaction was to go. So
that's still not too bad though. No lawsuits, you know, no lawyers involved. I think it's still pretty calm.
No lawyers. It was just really, it was a mess, man. It was really a mess.
I've went through those myself, man. So I'm just kind of, you know, I feel you, man. I really do. I went through that with a partner, too, in a coffee shop. And there were lawyers involved and a lot of other, oh, man. It was, yeah, same thing, man. Emotionally drained.
Yeah. So Joe and I, after that, we tried to, you know, salvage the business. And we really didn't. It just kind of continued on. We let it fester and drag out way too long. Eventually, Joe and I we'd eaten through our savings just living, and we tried to set up an office. We were hiring telemarketers to bring deals in, and we couldn't get any deals closed because all the banks were drying up and closing up. And so we'd spent all of our cash. Joe had a bit more, so he still had a bit of cash, but I was like, I gotta go get a job. I'm stuck. So I went to go work for a company. I kind of fell into a good company, an interesting company that was doing local SEO. And it was really growing. They were on a great trajectory. So I got in there and, you know, got promoted a couple times and within, you know, a 6-month period. And then I told Joe, who was playing poker at the time, like scraping by a living, but, you know, he's like hustling at the tables, right? I mean, that's really what he's doing. A couple grand a month, just surviving and hanging on to his bankroll. I said, dude, you should come do this, because he was getting sick of it. I mean, you can only play poker. Like, it's not really meaningful. You don't really get much out of that. And so that was his gripe. He's like, yeah, okay, I can survive doing this, but what kind of living is it, right? Like, what am I building here? So I said, come join us over here. We're doing some interesting stuff. And he'd known a bit about the company. So he came to join that company. And same thing, he got promoted a couple times. And we got to the point where we were running probably 70% of the operations side. There was a sales side too, but we were running probably 70% of the operations side. Had like at the most probably 70, 75 employees under the two of us.
Wow.
So we had a good crew going on there, and we'd at that point got a seat at the table. So, you know, the 10, 12 people in the company that were really the decision makers, we would sit down in meetings with them. And so we were, you know, upper middle management, lower senior management in the company. We started to get an itch too. So we realized that they had a need. We were hiring people like, you know, if you have a pulse, you're hired, because we were growing so fast that, you know, we needed people. And so there was a great opportunity for us to, you know, send some of the work offshore, right? Because we can scale people a lot quicker. So we had, when we were in when we were doing our own mortgage thing, we'd hired a virtual assistant in the Philippines, and she was fantastic. Even though the business ended up going to crap, she was amazing. Great value, smart, helpful. We were like, wow, that is an interesting thing. That virtual assistant, virtual employee thing, that's going to be something for us. I get that. So in the local SEO company, we said, you know, why don't we set up something in the Philippines and we can have some more back office stuff done? And the company was like, yep, that sounds like a good idea. You guys set it up. So we set it up. I started growing it out, 4 people, 6 people, 8 people, 10 people. Finally, we went out to the Philippines to meet up with the team. And we came back and told CEO, CFO, CEO. We said, look, guys, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. We have them all working out of the manager's house. Like, she's got computers off. Like, it was like sweatshop-ish, right? I mean, really, all these people are in there. There's like a fan blowing on them to keep them. It was horrible. And we were like, you know, we didn't mean to set up this way. It just kind of became this animal, this beast that, you know, got away from us. We need to get this fixed. So we just set up an office in the Philippines and like really go for it. I ended up talking to my mentor at the time, who was the COO. And he was like, you know, look, guys, he said, you should really put together a proposal. So he kind of like helped us sculpt what we wanted it to be. Joe and I knew that we were ready at that point. We had built our, I think, courage back up. We'd built our, you know, our entrepreneurial spirit was, you know, moving on, and we were ready to get a business going again. So we thought this is an excellent opportunity for us to outsource ourselves and just start working with our company. And so we took, you know, I remember the day actually I signed paperwork over basically effectively quitting my job. And I was then as a contractor. So I stayed on with the company. I was still going into the office every day, meeting with everyone there. Joe flew out to the Philippines. This is probably August of 2009.
Okay.
So Joe moved out to the Philippines. I stayed on with the company as a contractor and stayed there. So I didn't actually make the move to the Philippines until January 2010. I think that's right. That was a crazy time. We were crushing it, honestly. You know, that company we'd worked for, you know, built up a team to about 30 people in the Philippines. So, and it was all under our name, our company. We'd set up a corporate structure or a corporation in the Philippines. So we now had our U.S. corp, which we had still maintained, and we had our Philippines corporation now, which was an interesting process to get that set up, especially when you're in the U.S. But we had set that up, and we were rolling. So I fly out to the Philippines. Oh, my first time business class too. Crazy expensive ticket, but I was like, you know what? I'm moving to the Philippines. I'm gonna fly international business like a boss.
Like a boss.
Flew out to the Philippines, got off the plane, and said, "Wow, man, wow!" I had two huge suitcases packed full of the stuff I was bringing with me, and I was there, man. I was in another country, ready to make my way. Eventually, they dropped us at the end of 2010, and you know they were going in a different direction. They found out that their cost of sales were just too high, and so they tried it. They were playing with that, and it just wasn't working. They were spending a lot of investment money acquiring clients, and it just wasn't working out. The ROI wasn't there, so they started cutting back and going in a different direction. They cut out their sales team and a bunch of things. So we were stuck. We had these smart, talented people we'd hired in the Philippines, and nothing to do with them. So we said, we don't want to let them go. We think that we can get them placed in another outsourcing company. So what are we going to do with them in the meantime? So we tried a couple of things. We put them to work doing silly stuff like Mechanical Turk, where you click here, click there, make a little bit of money. And that sucked. They weren't even paying their salaries. We're making like, 40 cents an hour or something. This was no good. So we tried something else. We started building niche sites. And that started to take off. It took a few months, but we committed to it. We said, look, we're going to do this for 6 months, see what happens. And we'll be at risk with this one. That's fine. Put a bunch of hours in that first month, and we had a bunch of people working on it. We made like $30. And we're like, oh, this is scary, but we'll keep at it. Next month, we made a couple $100. A month after that, a couple thousand. And we started realizing, okay, now we're – at one point, we were about, I think, maybe 10,000 in actual spend in the hole, and then a bunch of my time and some of Joe's time at that point. But it started to finally turn a corner. And then we realized, and we were like, it's working, but we need more money. So we could probably use another $30,000 if we really want to build this up. And I was like, let's do it. And Joe was like, no way, man. That's a big, that's quite the nut for us to invest in this. I mean, that would put us at risk. So we had to come up with an alternative. We're like, what are we going to do? And so the idea was, well, why don't we sell some of the sites off to fund our growth, right? We can sell some of the sites that are earning today, front load that cash, boost cash flow, and then reinvest that into, hiring more people, building out more sites, and continuing the process, because we weren't really where we wanted to be. We need to be creating more sites if we really want to make an impact, make a good amount of money. So that's what we did, and it worked like a champ. We started selling some of these sites off, and people were buying them, and we would front load our cash and be able to take that cash and reinvest it into building more sites. And we were able to scale really quickly doing that. Through 2011, we saw some pretty massive growth. Don't hold me to this, but I think we went and finally we made like about $100,000 in 2011 through this. And then it really blew up. All those efforts really paid off in 2012, where we, crushed it with that side of the business.
I think we met around 2010, kind of when I was in the AdSense sites as well. And I remember you talking to me and I was like, man, this guy, he's got to have a team behind him. I had like 3 employees at that time. And you were talking about like building like 100 of sites, I don't know if it was like a week or every 2 weeks. I worked 20 hours a day myself. I was hustling almost everyone I knew. I was like, there's no way this guy's doing it himself.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad about this. So we tried to clear up our message, but people thought, okay, well, this guy just thinks he can knock out all these sites, or that we're doing it all automated, or we've got some like black hat stuff going on. And that wasn't the case at all. We just had a big team behind us. And it wasn't just Joe and I in a basement just knocking out sites. We had a team of people that could do stuff for us. And I think that's pretty critical, is that we were leveraging our ability to build teams of people that can coordinate their work and get stuff done. We were leveraging that with niche sites. So it really could have been anything. It wasn't the niche sites necessarily. It was the fact that we had a great way. We'd fumbled our way into this way of building up awesome teams that can do cool stuff.
I think that's great too, man. Like a lot of small business owners, it's really a one person operation. Maybe they'll have like three people underneath them, but they're still micromanaging everyone.
I think anyone who runs a small business in the US, and let's say that you have a couple of employees, maybe you have a partner or something, and you know, there's an opportunity for you to work with offshore VAs or build a team doing things that are helpful to your business that are will help you grow. You should absolutely get into it. There's a learning curve, and it's not the easy button or the magic bullet that you hear people promise. Outsource it and it'll just be done for you magically. No, you're going to screw some stuff up and it's going to be kind of messy at first. But once you get that down, I mean, it's a great way to leverage, you know, a distributed team and put yourself, you know, in a better position than your competition. So if you're doing it and your competition isn't, you're going to be able to crush them. And I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, definitely. So you guys have been kind of partners for how many years now?
Yeah, it's about 9 years now. I'll tell you, it's funny. If you ever listen to it, because we've done podcast episodes on partnerships and we've been on other podcasts talking about partnerships, and we're really negative. Really negative about partnerships in general. And we've talked to so many people that partner with that kind of their buddies. And then whether things go bad, which if it goes bad, it can turn into a nightmare. And things go well, it can turn into a nightmare too. You listen to any of these startups that became billion-dollar companies, and oh, yeah. You know the nightmare that they went through with partnerships and equity, and it just gets really ugly. People start getting greedy, and it can be a mess. So partnerships are scary. I think that Joe and I, even though I said business can get really personal. And it can get really personal between Joe and I, you know, differences of opinion, different ways we view our business and the world. But we understand that the business is more important than just our personal, you know, views. So we take it from the perspective that, you know, the business is our baby. It's something that needs to be protected and grown. And it's not like a business partnership is an awful lot like a marriage.
So is it like a legal partnership, or is it just, you know, some spit in a handshake?
No, legal partnership, both in our U.S. corporation and the corporation we have in the Philippines. So we are 50-50. And in the Philippines, it's kind of a weird deal. So we have a corporation, and the Philippines corporation is owned 95% by our U.S. corporation. And then for the other 5%, I'm 1%, Joe's 1%, and we have 3 Filipino placeholders. The way it works is you need to have 60% or more owned by Filipinos. The workaround is that the corporation in the Philippines can be owned by a foreign corporation, and then you can have 1% placeholders to make up that requirement. And that's our corporate structure. So.
And you need 3 of them, right?
Yeah. So we have that. And then the fact that we have a corporation here is great because we can, you know, get into legal agreements, we can sign contracts, we can buy property, we can do anything that any Philippines corporation can do as a legal entity. So, you know, I actually recommend this to people that are moving to the Philippines to retire or whatever, or they're going to buy a house and they want to put it in their, you know, girlfriend's name or their wife's name or whatever. I mean, that's fine. But you might want to consider setting up a corporation in the Philippines and having that corporation own the house, own the property. Especially if you're talking about your nest egg, your retirement, that might be a good option to look at.
I think that's awesome. So what you're saying is just set up a corporation in the States, like let's say New Mexico, get an anonymous corporation, you know, just to keep your stuff safe. Then you move to the Philippines, you get 3 placeholders. I mean, how did you get the placeholders? Your employees or?
No attorney in the Philippines set it up. 2 of the people were our employees and 1 was not.
How much does it cost?
I don't know. It's pretty expensive, but we didn't really know what we were doing. So we just went with...
Just a ballpark. I mean, it's, you know...
Maybe 4,000 or something. So
okay.
We went with a more expensive law office here in the Philippines, and we didn't know what we were doing. I think we spent maybe 4,000 to 5,000. I think you'd probably do it a lot cheaper. And if someone were smart, they would set up a business that specifically allows people to do that and focus on retirees and business owners that are coming over here. I think you could do well doing that. But Yeah, so we spent $4,000 or $5,000. You could probably get away with, if you can do it right, a couple grand, I'd imagine, $2,000 to $3,000.
That's a whole different lifestyle someone could lead by taking that path.
Absolutely. And now you have your corporation here in the Philippines. You can sign contracts, buy land, do whatever you want to do.
That's cool. Yeah, I want to get back to this partnership deal. So you're 50-50 partners, right?
50-50 partner on the US company, yeah.
So obviously when you don't agree on something, there's really no one, right, to step in and take sides. How do you guys deal with that?
You have to really cut out your ego. And there are times where I'm arguing for something passionately, Joe will make a point I hadn't thought of, and I have to completely back down, reverse course, and say, yep, that's the better move for the business. And we've learned that. That just comes over time and experience, I think. And you don't always get it right. And we do come to impasses sometimes, but it's rarely the kind of impasse that, will shut our business down, that will, completely lock it up.
Yeah, because I think I seen Joe in a video on your guys' site training for a boxing match, right?
Yeah, man. If it comes down to it, I'm avoiding that guy. Yeah, I'll get the lawyers involved because that guy's a boxing machine. So, that's one of the crazy things you can do in the Philippines is that, there's a couple of buddies. There's him and another friend of ours that were talking about kind of doing some boxing, maybe taking a month in training. And they were going to just fight in a local ring. And, a couple of friends, we were going to come and check it out. That'd be fun. And then it turns into this crazy thing. It starts getting bigger and bigger. And we had our team go check into renting out a gym that can seat 3,000 people. And we figured the price wasn't that bad. And so we started setting that up and get a boxing ring. We started getting other matches. Finally, it turned into this crazy thing where we had a sponsor. We got on the radio. We had a billboard up. It was insane, man. So we ended up having, maybe 1,000, 1,200 people show to this event. It was free to the public. And then if you want a VIP seat, you go there. There were food and snacks you could buy. We had I think 7 or 8 boxing matches completely with our buddies being the main event. Another friend of ours was announcing. It was insane. So we threw this crazy boxing event. It was a charity boxing event. So we actually gave, we didn't make any money on the deal. So the charities wouldn't have got anything. So we just allotted some money for the charities afterwards. But this crazy boxing event, we're all there and it's insane. We're all screaming and it was just wild. We put that on. I think it cost us, with sponsors and stuff, I think it cost us a few $1,000s. We were out of pocket on that. But it was just so much fun. It was a experience of a lifetime kind of thing.
Yeah, that seemed epic, man. It was people with signs, Joe.
Oh, yeah. it was insane. And so we had a condom sponsor. We know a guy that his girlfriend's an FHM girl. So she came down and had some friends as our ring girls. And it was insane, dude. So you're just able to do these crazy things in the Philippines because you can. I mean, you have the opportunity to do it. So why the hell not? And you run into some amazing people. So we were, when Joe first got out here, he's friends with a real estate developer. Not friends with him, but met him. And there we were talking a little bit of business, and we did a little bit of business with the guys, but he just kind of hung out with them a bit. The guy's like, hey, I'd like to take you flying this Saturday. Like, okay. So he goes there. They go to the airfield, and the guy owns a private plane. So he takes Joe up. They're flying around the city, checking out the city. And that kind of stuff, for me, maybe this happens for other people, but that kind of thing doesn't happen for me back in the U.S. I was in Southern California working my job. You just don't have someone that's like, hey, let me take you over my private plane, and we'll take a flight around the city, and we can talk business. That's craziness. But that kind of stuff happens here pretty often. I mean, often enough to where it's cool.
Yeah, and I think that's something that the listeners will really appreciate too, hearing that difference between the life they know in the States and then something like you're doing, right? And there's actually a way for them maybe to do it, like you just said with the corporation, right? There is a path. I mean, obviously, it's not easy, right? It's not simple for someone to pack up and, just start some kind of an online business or something in the Philippines. That's not a simple thing to do, but it is possible. It is possible.
It's a lot easier than you think when you actually start heading down the path. It's definitely possible. And I think a lot of people say, oh, that sounds cool, and then go back to what they really, they were doing before. But I know a lot of people, hundreds of people that have done this type of thing that have said, hey, I want a different experience. I'm going to, leave where I'm at. I'm going to try, start building my business offshore. I'm going to start, traveling around. I'm going to set something up that allows me the freedom to do that. And they've been successful with it. So yeah, I think the people that really want to do it. So yeah, maybe some of your listeners are thinking, I'll do this eventually. you know, start putting a plan together to make that happen, right? Start taking the first steps toward that. Get involved in communities where people are already doing that, and you'll I think find the opportunities will find you, really.
You guys became online brokers now, right? So you're selling sites, kind of connecting buyers and sellers, right, basically?
Yeah, so we started selling our own sites to start, and then we had a bunch of people that were asking if they could sell with us. And so we said, yeah, sure. So when we switched our brand from Adsense Flippers to Empire Flippers, we allowed people to broker their sites with us. And now, yeah, we have our community people that are looking to buy websites, looking to sell websites. We generally broker in the $5,000 to $100,000 range. So sites making $250 to $5,000 a month in net profit are the sites that sell well and we typically target.
And you verify those sites, right? Like that they're making the income that the person says they're making.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, dude. just teasing. Yeah, we absolutely verify them. So we have a vetting process that we take everyone through. That includes a bunch of checks. It includes making sure that the content's unique, making sure that the earnings are there, making sure they have the right to sell the site and that they actually own the site themselves, you know, a bunch of different things. So they have to pass our tests. And about, I'd say about 30, 35% of sites that apply to sell with us don't pass. So they actually have to pay money up front to get checked, to get vetted by us. If you don't pass, we do refund the money, so you're not out. But yeah, it's $300 if you want to list your site with us so that we can take a look. And about around a third of those don't pass. So yeah, what's left, what does pass our checks and are, you know, we're able to verify the seller, verify the seller's identity, make sure they're real people and everything. They get listed on our marketplace. And it depends how long they sell. It depends, you know, like let's say a $7,000 site is likely to sell faster than a, you know, $20,000 site, which is likely to sell faster than a $50,000 site. So, you know, it's finding the right buyers, and it takes a little longer, maybe a, you know, week or two for the first group, you know, 4 weeks for the second, and 2 to 3 months for the third. So,
yeah, but you know, we're saying websites, but it's really businesses, right? You're buying and selling businesses.
It is. It's small, almost like lifestyle businesses, but businesses nonetheless. Yeah. So when you get like the $500,000, $600,000 range, you're really talking about private equity groups. You're talking about a much more involved process than what we do. What we do is we serve the market that's on the lower end, not the $500, you know, starter sites you can buy on flippa.com or something, which is kind of like an auction house. It's kind of like the eBay for buying and selling websites. We're talking about the ones that aren't quite there yet, but are valuable enough where you want someone else that knows how to, you know, buy and sell websites to help guide you through the process.
Basically, you know, you have a website that can make $5,000 or $10,000 a month, right? And that's, you know, a lot of small businesses, that's how much they make at the most. Like I had a coffee shop and I think the whole thing pulled in $20,000 per month after expenses. It was like maybe $5,000 left for me. So with something like you're selling, someone can buy a site, a business that's going to bring in $5,000 to $10,000 a month. That's maybe fairly automated too. You know, you got to work something though, like, you know, a couple hours. I mean, you probably need some training before that.
Yeah. Here's an example. We've got a site right now for sale today. It makes $2,700 a month net. So that's the net profit on the site. It's for sale for $57,000, I think. And it makes its money through ads that are on the site, sells ebooks, training courses, and practice exams. So most of the money comes in through that and then through some affiliates, which basically that means that on the site, we sell third-party products and then the site gets a piece of that income. So whenever someone buys that product, they maybe get 20%. And the actual product creator gets 80%, let's say. So that's how it makes its money. But the funny thing is that it's not location dependent. Like you don't have to be in San Diego and to do anything. You can be wherever you want. You sit on a beach in Bali and work on the site. So you could be, you know, having content created. It's mostly self-contained. The only thing is every year, some of the books need to be redone. So we're selling it here in December, but the seller already has a plan for the 2014 books to be created. So that's already in process and that will go to the buyer. So they'll have a good year with the new books, with the, you know, everything ready to roll. They won't have to worry about that again until 2015. So yeah, it's a site that you can actually run anywhere. You can do it from the US, you can do it from Bali, you can do it from Thailand, wherever you want to be. So it's a great site for someone that wants to get started in the lifestyle. Now you have to fork over the cash, but I mean, it's a lifestyle change, you know, and I think that's what people are looking for. We can help people change their lives by selling sites, by helping them sell sites to provide cash flow that can change their business and where they're headed. And that's what's really exciting to me are these people that, you know, are selling their sites and they get a $50,000, $70,000, $80,000 cash injection and can go do what they, you know, something that they love, that they're passionate about. People can buy these small businesses and not have to deal with a coffee shop and, you know, the employees that are there and keeping the lights on and all the hassle. They can work on their laptop legitimately. And I think that's really exciting.
Plus, you know, like the idea I have in my head is a lot of the business owners that I know, they invest into retirement, right? Through 401ks. And then when that's kind of filled up, they buy stocks. And I just really think it's so much better if they can actually buy a couple of these businesses, these online businesses, maybe even hire some people to just kind of help them run it in the meantime and start controlling these streams of income that they can later on just fall back on when they're older, right? Because I mean, stocks, you can't control any of that.
There are risks, but there are risks with stocks too, right? And you know, the thing is, I was reading some great articles on Mark Cuban's blog, and he said, "You want some good advice? Here's what you need to do. You know, that 25% interest you're paying, especially when you include fees and interest rates and all the things on your credit cards, you should absolutely, you know, take your money out of the market, which you're getting probably an 8% return on. Pay off your crazy credit cards. In fact, borrow from your 401k and pay off those crazy credit cards." And I think a lot of people say, "Okay, well, I need investments," and they forget the fact that they're putting themselves in debt at a much higher interest rate than they need to be doing. You know, with websites, I mean, we're getting crazy returns, but that's also indicative of, you know, crazy risks. Now, I would say the better your monetization structure and traffic sources, the more diversified your portfolio can get. So, for example, with this site in particular, it has a couple of different monetization sources, so it's a bit more diversified there. But the traffic is organic, right? So you might be able to do some paid traffic too. You'd have to test through that, but it's organic. So for example, if Google changes their algorithm or something, it could crush your traffic. So that may be one site in a portfolio of sites. Let's say you have another two sites that are making similar amounts of money, but you're doing it via AdWords and Facebook paid advertising, right? That way, if Google Organic takes a hit on the one site, you've still got the paid traffic. They change the rules for the paid traffic, you've still got the organic. And I think, you know, savvier investors are figuring this out and starting to really look at their online investments as a portfolio of sites, you know, of their online stocks. And so diversifying yourself eventually becomes important.
Yeah, I think so. But there's really more control, though, with those than with stocks, with regular stocks.
Absolutely. You have a direct say in the success of your business, no question. And it's you know, investing in sites that you own is investing in yourself. I'd much rather like it's silly. It is crazy for Joe and I to take any business funds and put them in any kind of like safer long-term investments. That is ridiculous. We get such a higher return by investing in our own business, and we take some risks, and we definitely have some projects that suck and that are losers. But I mean, we have such a better return than we could get on the stock market with our own business that we'd be crazy to invest any money outside of ourselves. You know, let's say you buy a couple of sites and you kind of figure it out and you're starting to get into the game. You have a VA or two, or you and your wife or girlfriend like playing with the sites and tinkering with the sites. You start to figure some stuff out. You move your way at buying more sites and you've got a nice little portfolio going. I mean, you have a direct impact over that, and that's the way to be.
Yeah, and I just want to make a disclaimer. I don't get paid or any commission from anyone that buys anything from Justin. So this is just an idea that I've been really thinking. You know, if you're going to invest in stocks, why not invest in a portfolio you have control over? I mean, that's really, I'm a control freak, like when it comes to where my money goes. And I just feel like the sites, yeah, you can just build up a really nice portfolio. Like you said, something that's paid, something that's organic, maybe something off Facebook. And it's your little stock thing, but you control it. That's what I really like. You control the output more than anything. Like, you know, if some CEO steals something with, you know, some company and the stocks lose value or some Enron thing happens, like, you have no way of stopping that ever. Like, you don't even see it coming.
Yeah, Tom, your point on control is fantastic. I totally agree with it. And by the way, I do get paid if you buy anything from me. I'm just letting you know, so you can help.
Yeah,
you can help continue to fund my lifestyle and boxing events. And no, but honestly, I believe so strongly in this. I don't care if you, I mean, I want you to buy from us, but you can buy from anyone and I think still get the strategies done, still get it done. So, you know, so it's like Flipping Enterprises, another broker, Flippa, any of these guys. I think the strategy itself is pretty sound and really interesting. especially if you want the personal freedom that doesn't come with having to go into a job every day. There are some risks, and I think it's a learning experience. So I think it's worthwhile to get started slowly. Don't go and spend your nest egg on a site that you don't really know how to run. I think you should start off slowly and start to get into it, but it's a worthwhile venture. It's worthwhile playing around, tinkering, and starting to either build out or buy sites to build up a portfolio to kind of see how that works. That is going to be a great thing, an interesting thing in the future.
What I would really do, and I would recommend this, I mean, just do a split test, right? Get $200, put it into stocks, and get $200 and buy an AdSense site and just see which one brings you more income at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay, this has been great. Tell people where they can find you and if there's anything that you just want to push, because I mean, this is like your moment. You know, you can really...
I'm pushing, baby. Let's push for this now. I'm just kidding. You can check us out at empireflippers.com. That's our main website. We also have a podcast called the Empire Flippers Podcast. You can check it on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever it is you use. You can always give me a tweet. I'm on Twitter, @EmpireFlippers. Love to hear from you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.